Hello, this is the first recorded reading of annotated reading of Saga of Old City by Gary Gygax. We're starting with chapter one. I'll read through the paragraphs and say break. And at that point, I'll be commenting. And if anybody else wants to comment, please feel free. Chapter one. Big blackish rat sat upon the feast as a king upon his throne. Gord eyed the scene hungrily, his mouth watering at the sight of the trencher. Some incredibly wasteful person had discarded a slab of bread soaked in rich meat juices and embedded with succulent bits of things. It lay atop the garbage heap in the alleyway, and the rat sat peremptorily upon it. Gord stood nearby in jittery indecision, encouraged by hunger, restrained by fear. Then he decided to act. With a rapid motion, he scooped up a pebble and flung it at the rodent. It struck the rat on its flank, but the creature didn't run off as Gord had hoped. Instead, the rat bared its teeth viciously, voiced a horrid chittering noise, and advanced menacingly in Gord's direction. With a frightened shriek, Gord leapt back, turned, and fled. Such a threat easily overcame the gnawing feeling in his stomach. Break. All right, well, not much here, but you could comment that we have in this area of Greyhawk a large rat that is extraordinarily aggressive. But we also can say, as David Leonard pointed out on Monday, that it also shows a little bit of Gord's dexterity ability as he scoops up a pebble and is able to hit the rat in one little go. So, not much right there, but a little bit of note. All right, restarting. Page 9, paragraph 2. "Shit-eater!" Gord screamed over his shoulder as he fled the huge rodent. "Useless," he thought to himself as he slowed and sought a meal elsewhere. "I'm too small, too weak." How often had this lesson been drummed into him? Even as that thought came to mind, his brain fought to dismiss it, because the memories were too painful. Lena, the old scavenger woman who fostered him, cuffed him and beat him at will, especially if he tried to hold out a scrap of food from her. Although Gord was quick and clever, he was small, thought of himself as a runt, a coward, a failure. Now even a rat had made him run away. And Gord felt mean and miserable. He had to do something, anything. Otherwise, there was no reason to go on struggling to stay alive day to day. Break. All right, in this we're introduced to Lena, who's Gord's foster mother. And we're given a little more that Gord was quick and clever, at least by his own estimations. And there we have, you know, signs to further go on about his, in game terms, his dexterity and intelligence. All right. Restart. Page 10, paragraph 2. Gord began running again, as if to escape from himself. "You'll see. I'll show you all. You'll see," he chanted as he pounded through the narrow, dirty byways that were his home. Twistings and turnings of the alleys and gangways of Greyhawk's slum quarter were such that anyone not intimately familiar with them would be lost in minutes. Even the thieves avoided its crumbling ruins and decrepit shacks. Beggars, crazy men, and the desperate were the elite of its inhabitants. Gord, a short and skinny orphan, had spent all of his dozen years within the Swarren. Somehow he had managed to stay alive, thanks to his quickness, cleverness, and luck. Being called Gord the Gutless by the other urchins of the slum quarter didn't bother him much. At least he had managed to stay alive, unlike more of his fellow dwellers in this place than he cared to think about. Right, well, here, this is the first mention that we are in the slum quarters, and a description that has some relevant information. Right from the back, where right from the start of paragraph 2, where it says that the narrow, dirty byways, and then the twisting and turnings of the alleys and gangways would make anyone who wasn't intimately familiar with them get lost in a few minutes. Even the thieves avoided its ruins and decrepit shacks. We have beggars, crazy men, and the desperate were its elite inhabitants. Now, here Gygax is painting a picture of the slum quarters, and a good sense of building of how terrible a location it is within the city of Greyhawk, and the type of society that they have in Greyhawk, where you know, that the poor and the orphans and the crazy are you know, consigned to a terrible life. You know, not quite up to modern sensibilities. All right. Restart. Page 10, paragraph 4. Ford slowed his pace abruptly, then stopped and huddled, gasping, under a partially collapsed wall of an ancient warehouse. He had been using various refuges of this sort, one after the other, for several months. Each gave him some place to hide and be alone with his thoughts, and more recently, since he had been rid of Lena, served as his home for a while. His panting subsided, but as his wind returned, so did his hunger. The hollow ache of an empty stomach was nothing new to him. Even his earliest memories of Lena, the closest thing to a mother he had known, were linked with hunger. The main concern of all who lived within the decaying labyrinth of the slum quarter was getting food, each day enough to exist until the next break. All right, there's a little more we have about the ancient warehouse. You know, partially collapsed as part of what the slum quarter had once had. Not really enough to detail much. But then we have more about Gord's background. Gord has obviously been living by himself, and Lena's been gone for several months. That, I think, is all I can find, really. Again, emphasizing the labyrinth nature of the slum quarter. Kind of something that perhaps Gygax was inspired by the Thieves' World novels, which really had a big thing about the poor quarter, poor area, being such a labyrinth. All right. Restart. Page 10, last paragraph. Lena had died last winter. Many of the poor failed to survive the season, even though there were few really bitter days. The dampness and the weeks of nagging chill were sufficient to winnow out the weak. Gord had managed well enough without Lena since then, for he had actually been the provider for the last couple of years anyway. In fact, he had come to resent her whining and demands, her treating him of him as something less than a son. Once, Lena had showed him a simple, unremarkable box, telling him that it had something to do with his natural parents. Then, with cruel glee, she took it outside and buried it deep in the ground near the shack they shared. Best that this memory remain buried, she had cackled, and she never spoke about the box again. Break. Well, we learn that Lena has died, but that goes back to the last paragraph when we learn that he's been on his own several months. And we also see that he'd been living in a shack. And the kind of the implication that I get is that Lena and Gord had shared that shack as a stable place to live. After her death, Gord then is going and living in various abandoned places and not staying in one locale. Now, perhaps more importantly to the overall campaign, we also learned something about the weather in the city of Greyhawk, that there are very few really bitter days during the winter season. Now, we can take that as coming from Gord's point of view, or we could take that as a general who's only 12 years old, or we can take that as something that is more in keeping with the regular weather that happens in Greyhawk, that instead of being bitterly cold, there's more dampness and a nagging chill in the winter months. So it places Greyhawk within a certain locale, of where that weather would occur. We're given a little information about this box that has something to do with its parents, but right now there's no other hints and nothing to make Gord seem particularly special. But it is worth noting that it might have importance later in a later story. All right, restart. Page 11, paragraph 2. When Gord returned one day from his scavenging and found Lena's stiffened corpse in the shack, his first and only thoughts were ones of relief. Now he could have the little scraps of food he found all for himself. After checking it carefully for any possible valuables, he had rolled Lena's body out of the shack and left it for the mongrel dogs to take care of. Then he gathered up what little of value he could find and carry and left the shack, not the memories of it, behind him for good. As he recalled that day, Gord thought of what he possessed. Moving a board low on the good wall of his shelter, he drew out a bundle wrapped in a ragged square of cloth, his winter cloak. Break. All right, now here we're given a little more information and a little more atmosphere about how terrible the slum quarter is. We have the packs of mongrel dogs. We have that Lena's body is just pushed out in the street, and the feel that I get is that it is not an uncommon occurrence to just push the bodies out in the street to be consumed by the wild dogs. There isn't really tremendously more except to emphasize at the start how poor Gord is and how little he kind of feels for Lena. All right, restart, page 11, paragraph 3. He thought more about his past as he held the small parcel. "You're too small," Lena would shriek at him when Gord failed to bring back anything worth selling or eating. Then the old hag would cuff and kick him into a huddled, blubbering ball of misery. And hatred. Gord certainly did grow to hate his foster mother. Even at best, she was a despicable and wicked old crone. Break. Well, I get from this paragraph and from the previous is that we're seeing the development of somebody destined to be a thief. So if you're looking at how a thief's background could come about before he is a leveled character, here we're given that Gord had to learn his thievery just to survive. And I think that's worth noting. This paragraph kind of brings that to a head for me. That was Gord's upbringing, and therefore, like the development of a zero-level character to a first-level character, or even a common non-leveled character to a zero-level character. All right, restart. Page 11, paragraph 4. "Clever Gord, sly Gord," she would croon as she ate most of some scrap he would bring back. Lena would even pat him on the head and tell him to be quick and nimble, for a good head was better than a strong body, she would say, until he failed. Then he was a useless runt. Inside the parcel were all his worldly possessions, aside from the clothing he wore. The first thing Gord took out was a tiny dried apple, which he ate in a single bite. As he munched on the withered fruit, he surveyed the remainder of the treasure. There were 2 drabs, nearly worthless iron coins of least value, but all the money he had ever owned. He remembered finding them hidden in the hem of Lena's threadbare shawl. Beside them in the parcel was a small chipped square of glass. Gord could use it to start a fire if the sun was brightly shining. And, he thought, it pretty besides. A longish coil of leather thong, a small broken-tipped kitchen knife, and a cracked wooden box were all that remained. There was nothing more to eat and nothing to sell. The 2 drabs went by Gord enough food to get him past tomorrow, and carrying them on his person invited danger. All right, break. Perhaps like one of the most important things in this paragraph is the mention of currency. Here we have the 2 iron drabs, which are pretty much, limited to Greyhawk, city of Greyhawk, iron coins. Now, even though these 2 coins are the least denomination, still Gord, even though he can't get enough food to get him past tomorrow, should get him some food with those iron drabs. And we talk a lot about the various gold or silver economies, and here we have at the very bottom, we have the city of Greyhawk with the lowest coin being an iron drab. There's really not much more in here, a little more about Lena, and maybe a little more about Gord, but I find that the iron drabs are the most significant thing to see mentioned right here. All right, we start. Page number 12, paragraph 2. Shortly after Lena's death, a gang had invaded the area. They called themselves the Headsmen because one of the bigger boys had discovered a large cleaver in one of the deserted shambles nearby. With this weapon, he had easily convinced the others to accept his leadership. These dozen hoodlums quickly established their own territory, even killing a crazy hermit who contested their domain. The gang members were all a bit older than Gord, bigger than he, and much more aggressive. They promptly proceeded to deliberately make life even more miserable for Gord. Not only did he have to find food or steal it, then had to get back to his place of refuge without one of the gang members stopping him and taking it away. They seemed to be everywhere, and no matter how careful Gord was, they had often caught him and stolen whatever he carried. Because there was no other area of the city where a homeless and friendless beggar boy could go, Gord now had accepted the new peril of the gang as yet another obstacle on the path of his hard and miserable life. Now with Lena gone, Gord was able to devour anything he found, but that meant what he couldn't eat then and there must be left behind, or he risked having it and himself fall into the clutches of the gang. There was no margin for Gord, no store of food against a leaner-than-usual day. All right, break. Now, this paragraph, it introduces the gang, the headsman, gives more atmosphere about the slum quarter and just how terrible a place it is. But I think that the most significant thing, bit of information, is because there was no other area of the city where a homeless and friendless beggar boy could go. So that just kind of states that, you know, the slum quarter isn't kind of repeated anywhere else in the rest of Old City, or any of the other quarters don't have anywhere as bad as this place. And also it seems to be where all the poorest, homeless, craziest people at the bottom end of the social scale are pushed to. So the city of Greyhawk, we're given that the slum quarter is the worst of the worst. And a little information that a as bad as it is here, it's not quite as bad anywhere else in the city. All right, restart. Page 12, paragraph 3. No help for it, Gord thought. He had stayed long enough in this hiding place. Now it was time to sit out again, and he had to risk carrying his valuables with him. He tucked the 2 coins in the fold of his ragged shirt, added the knife, and set out to see if something couldn't be salvaged out of the day. Gord thought he had managed to sneak safely through the place of worst danger, and was creeping along the front of a tenement, just a block away from the edge of the headsman's territory, when a hand darted out of a doorway and grabbed him. "Well, well, if it ain't little Gord the Gutless, where are you sneaking off to this time, wee mouse?" Gord's heart sank as he looked from hand to arm to face. The broken-toothed grin that greeted his frightened gaze belonged to Snaggle. Full-grown and hulking, this stupid youth was meanest of the gang members. As Gord tried to break away and run, Snaggle's hand closed tightly on the collar of Gord's shirt. While Gord hung helpless, his feet flailing several inches above the alley dirt, Snaggle frisked his person with his free hand. "Well, what the hell is this, Gutless?" The lout held up the small knife, looking at its dulled and broken edge. "Planning murder, huh?" Laughing at his own witticism, Snaggle cast the blade aside and continued his search of Gord's clothing. When his fingers found the 2 lumps that comprised Gord's entire fortune, they froze for a second. Then they clutched and tore. Gord looked down at as his captor opened his fist. The drabs and a piece of his shirt were revealed. Snaggle abruptly straightened his other arm, and Gord flew sprawling into the alley, stunned. "Listen, you little shit," Snaggle said as he stepped to where his helpless victim lay. "Holding out on the headsman ain't healthy." Gord, terrified, shut his eyes tight as Snaggle grabbed for him again. Then he felt himself being raised into the air, and he was sure the end had come. He felt the warmth of his own urine as his bladder beyond his control voided itself. The yellow trickle caught Snaggle's attention, and ironically saved Gord from a worse fate. "Ah ha ha, pissed your pants 'cause of me," Snaggle laughed with real pleasure at the thought, and dropped the small boy with disdain. "Gutless piss pants ain't worth smashing anyway. Too much fun to have around." Still mirthful, Snaggle merely kicked Gord a couple of times, and not hard enough to break at ribs at that. Gord lay still, too frightened to move. "Listen, chicken piss, I let you off easy this time. You make me laugh. Next time I won't be so nice, so you better watch out. When I see you around here again, if you ain't got nothing better than a broken toothpick and a pair of drabs, I'll bust you up good, and slow too, so's all us guys can enjoy it." "Now get your yellow ass out of my face, 'cause I hate gutless little punks." Gord scrambled away on all fours, clambered to his feet, and ran as fast as he could. As he fled, Gord heard, "Make it a handful of coppers next time, piss pants, and I'll make ya our jester, ha ha ha." Break. Well, that was about a page's worth right there. Now, mostly what I found in those paragraphs were, besides the mention of Snaggle, who seems a rather unimportant character for the rest of the story, is that Gord, it gives more about Gord a little bit, and also more about how terrible the slum quarter can be. But there's really not a tremendous lot that I found right there. At the very end, we have the comment about the coppers. And obviously a handful of coppers is quite a wealth to the people of the slum quarter. All right. Restart. Page 14, paragraph 3. Ward's face was flushed with shame, hot tingling that washed away the feeling, but not the memory of the chill, pale fear he had just experienced. In the back of his mind, Gord heard Lena cackling and screeching at him in her hag's voice. "Gutless little runt, you ain't even any use to yourself." It was true, for now he had nothing, no one. There was no place for him to go, nowhere to hide. His mind darted here and there, skittering from thought to thought, like a mouse trapped in a box. The voice in his head kept cackling and berating him, though underlying his frenzy, and this kept Gord from totally giving way to panic and despair. He was weak and lacked courage, but there was hatred to drive him. What had just happened was too much for even Gord to pass off as merely another episode in a rotten life. Gutless or not, he had some bit of pride remaining. Somehow, Gord had to restore himself in his own eyes and settle with Snaggle in the process. Fully returning to reality, Gord looked round and got his bearings. He was at the edge of the worst part of the slum quarter, near the better sector, where menial labors and others and that ilk lived. This was unsafe territory for an urchin. These working people didn't want Gord's kind around, knowing that they were there only to steal what little these poor folk possessed. He turned to retrace his steps and then stopped. At this point, he had nothing more to lose. Break. All right, well, here we are, and within the slum quarter, we have an area that is a little better for the menial laborers and other people of that sort. And obviously, they do a job of keeping the real the real crazies, the gang members, at least the poorest kind, and the youngest, and the orphans like Gord, pushed back into the worst sections of the slum quarter. All right, restart, page 14, last paragraph. Gord slid into the shallow space of a boarded-up doorway and scrutinized the area, not knowing what he was looking for, but willing to settle for anything promising. The narrow alley he was in gave onto a wider lane just ahead. He saw occasional figures passing the mouth of the passage. Anything else? Glancing up, Gord saw a series of moving shadows. It took only a moment or two for him to figure out that someone had a line of washing hung out to dry on the rooftop across the way. Now here's a stroke of real luck, he thought, as he ascended the gap by pressing his feet against one wall and his back and palms against the other. Break. All right, well, here, we're given two things that I think are at least fairly significant, that the area at the end of the slum quarters here, they are, it is a much different locale in that there's someone willing to put, decent or semi-decent, respectable, at least clothing, out on a washing line that could be stolen. Whereas in the slum quarter, it seems like no one has anything but rags. So at the edge of this slum quarter, there seems to be a better sector. And as is mentioned, but it kind of brings it home that it's a much different area than the worst of the slum quarter itself. Now, at the end here, which is a different paragraph, we have that Gord is able to climb up a wall by putting his back and feet and making his way up. Now that kind of seems a little strange. It speaks of Gord being not only agile, but having the strength to do that. So Gord's limited diet and his training at stealing food in the worst of the area seems to have given him, besides whatever natural abilities he has, it's kept him in enough shape so that he can do that little thing of climbing up a wall in a very difficult way. All right, restart. Page 15, paragraph 2. A few minutes later, a shabbily dressed boy entered Killcat Lane from a disused alley. From the look of him, he could have been one of dozens of lads who traveled in this vicinity, a link boy or bound boy of some sort on an errand for master or mistress, perhaps even the son of a local resident. A closer look might have brought a question to the observer's mind, however. Although the worn blouse and baggy trousers were clean, the wearer most certainly was not. And where were the lad's sandals? Break. Here we have the first mention of a Greyhawk locale. Besides slum quarter in general, we have Killcat Lane. Now, from what we can piece together, Killcat Lane is in the slum quarter and at the edge of it, and it is in the area of the slum quarter where the menial workers and those kind are living, so it's in the better section of the slum quarter. So we have some unnamed alley coming from the worst of the slum quarter, and there we have Killcat Lane. Get a little thing about what kind of people would be there as he talks about a link boy or bound boy on an errand, which makes it a generally more safe area than we have in the worst of the slum quarter, and a little idea of what kind of dress could be expected in this outer edge of the slum quarter with clean blouse and baggy trousers. Even though they're worn, they're expected that it's a much more, the society of that area doesn't seem to be the kind of place where you'd push bodies out in the street to be eaten by wild dogs. So there's obviously something going on at this end of the city that keeps all that back into the worst area of the slum quarter. All right, restart. Page 15, paragraph 3. Aware that his disguise was not perfect, Gord was feeling confident nonetheless. He had managed to steal a set of clothes better than any he had ever worn before. Although there had been nothing on the laundry line worth taking for sale somewhere, at least he could now move freely through this part of the quarter to the foreign quarter nearby. This opened up a whole realm of possibilities to him, and Gord's mind raced over the more exciting ones. An unattended cash box would make him rich enough to live comfortably for months and enable him to afford a ruffian to assassinate Snaggle. Perhaps he'd managed to find a jeweled weapon, a dagger or a small sword, left unguarded for a moment. After a grab and a fast getaway into the slum quarter's byways, Gord figured he would be on easy street for life, and he would hire a personal attendant to dispatch all of the miscreable headsmen. The visions, indeed, were dancing deliciously in Gord's mind as he skipped into the heart of that portion of old Greyhawk City set aside for strangers. Break. All right. Now, it looks as if we've had Gord pass from the slum quarter into the foreign quarter. Obviously, again, things seem to have moved up as far as what Gord is imagining as possible to steal. If he's talking about jeweled weapons or cash boxes with enough money, his visions are, of course, daydreams. But here we have the description that this end of the slum quarter goes from the worst of the slum quarter to the menial laborers and then into the foreign quarter. So we have those slum and foreign quarter as adjacent. All right, restart, page 15, last paragraph. At the Petit Bazaar near the Black Gate, Gord came out of his wishful reverie and back into the real world. The worn cobbles of the rectangular plaza were crowded with colorfully draped and awning booths, and rickety wagons and carts from which produce and handmade goods were hucked. The stone and brick buildings that walled the Petit Bazaar made the din of peddlers' shouts and craftsmen's calls, mixed with bargaining and insults yelled at the top of the customers' voices, fairly dizzy his head. Worse still, sight of so many good things to eat, the aroma of broiling meat, bubbling soup, freshly baked bread, ripe galda fruit, caused Gord's stomach to contract in waves of hunger. What should he do? Steal something to eat? Starvation. All right. Restart. Page 15, paragraph 2. A few minutes later, a shabbily dressed boy entered Kilcat Lane from a disused alley. From the look of him, he could have been one of dozens of lads who traveled in this vicinity, a link boy or bound boy of some sort on an errand for master or mistress, perhaps even the son of a local resident. A closer look might have brought a question to the observer's mind, however. Although the worn blouse and baggy trousers were clean, the wearer most certainly was not. And where were the lad's sandals? Like, all right, well, what we're given here is a couple bits of information that this Kilcat Lane is the first specific road that is mentioned. We know from, you know, what has happened in the past, that Kilcat Lane, according to this, is in the outer section of the slum quarter. It's in the area where the menial laborers are and others of that ilk. And then we're kind of given a description here of what kind of people are commonly thought in that area, which is a link boy or bound boy on an errand, and that the kind of clothing is worn, but clean and simple. Now, that provides us with a little idea about how bad the slum quarter is, and this outer area of the slum quarter is much different. I mean, if we have an area where the headsmen are going to jump people and fight for territory and everybody is in rags, and then we have an area just down an alleyway where the young boys like Gord can run freely through the street, where the people are in clean clothing and not in rags, there's got to be something at that edge of the slum quarter that is keeping the terrible people of, and you know, if you imagine that there are wild dogs, something is keeping them from this outer section where Kilcat Lane is. All right. Restart. Page 15, paragraph 3. Aware that his disguise was not perfect, Gord was feeling confident nonetheless. He had managed to steal a set of clothes better than any he had ever worn before. Although there had been nothing on the laundry line worth taking for sale somewhere, at least he could now move freely through this part of the quarter to the foreign quarter nearby. This opened up a whole realm of possibilities to him, and Gord's mind raced over the more exciting ones. An unintended cash box would make him rich enough to live comfortably for months and enable him to afford a ruffian to assassinate Snaggle. Perhaps he'd manage to find a jeweled weapon, a dagger, or a small sword, left unguarded for a moment. After a grab and a fast getaway into the slum quarter's byways, Gord figured he would be on Easy Street for life, and he would hire a personal attendant to dispatch all of the miserable headsmen. Visions, indeed, were dancing deliciously in Gord's mind as he skipped into the heart of that portion of old Greyhawk City set aside for strangers. Break. All right, now we have the mention of the foreign quarter, which is one of the more significant things here, especially as it's given, we get to go through the worst of the slum quarter, we enter a better section on its outer edge, And then now we're in the foreign quarter. So here we're given, we're building the Greyhawk map of where the quarters are located. Now we're also kind of given a little bit about what kind of things Gord envisions for himself that would be stealable in the foreign quarter. Now at the beginning of this paragraph, Gord has put himself in a disguise. Now that is potentially part of his set of thieving skills that he has is developing in its nascence here, where it is just starting out, where Gord is a potential a character thief. And right here is what you could say would be good background material if somebody was thinking about developing a city thief character. Here we have the things that Gygax thought would work as, what kind of life that might lead to that, Greyhawk city thief. Now, there's also comment about Gord hiring a ruffian. Now, in most cases, I would say, and my general feel is that the ruffian is not a character class. But with the development that I've seen in Dungeons & Dragons, is that a ruffian may actually have been, and may even be, I don't know, something that was considered as a potential character class. All right. Restart. Page 15, last paragraph. At the Petit Bazaar near the Black Gate, Gord came out of his wishful reverie and back into the real world. The worn cobbles of the rectangular plaza were crowded with colorfully draped and awning booths and rickety wagons and carts, from which produce and handmade goods were hucked. The stone and brick buildings that walled the Petit Bazaar made the din of peddler shouts and craftsmen's calls, mixed with bargaining and insults, yelled at the top of customers' voices, fairly dizzy his head. Worse still, the sight of so many good things to eat, the aroma of broiling meat, bubbling soup, freshly baked bread, ripe galda fruit, caused Gord's stomach to contract in waves of hunger. What should he do? Steal something to eat? Starvation was only a step behind, as always. Gord paused for a moment, invisible in an eddy where a buttress diverted the stream of human traffic elsewhere. A small, insignificant boy who was of no interest to anyone. Break. All right, well, here we have the Petit Bazaar and the Black Gate. Now, obviously, we have the Petit Bazaar in the foreign quarter, and the Black Gate should be the gateway between the wall that separates the slum quarter and the foreign quarter. Now, we have got a description of the Petit Bazaar, rectangular plaza, worn cobbles. We have a description here and a little atmosphere of what you'd find in it between the colorfully draped and awning booths, rickety wagons and carts. We have produce and handmade goods. And then we have cooked foods with the meat and the bubbling soup and baked bread. That's the kind of thing that right away you can find on entering the Petit Bazaar, at least from the direction that Gord came. Now, the galda fruit, I'm not sure if the galda fruit is a real earthly fruit from our world that I'm unfamiliar with, or a fruit that is unique to the Greyhawk campaign. That's worth finding out, and who knows, various little minutia like that can be something that can even stir adventures. All right, going to restart. This is page 16, chapter 2. I'm sorry, page 16, paragraph 2. The place was thronged with the usual motley array of beings. Mixed with the typical city dwellers were all forms of outlanders, farmers and serfs from the surrounding area, dark and swarthy Rene barge folk, half-orcs, unemployed mercenaries from Hardby and the Wild Coast, merchants and teamsters from all parts, and demi-humans from who knew where. Gord slipped into the wake of a group of tall fellows, a half-score strong. The halflings were intent on some business and didn't notice Gord at all. In turn, others around might easily mistake him for one of their number. Thus camouflaged, Gord worked his way along with the group, past the cheap goods to where the valuable merchandise was offered. As the party of small folk passed close to a booth offering silver jewelry, Gord could restrain himself no longer. The opportunity was there, and he acted partly out of instinct and partly out of desperation. A dart of the hand and a beautifully wrought piece of armware was missing from the counter and safely within Gord's blouse. It was easy. No hue and cry went up, so Gord continued to pace the tall fellows until they reached a place where a side alley wandered away from the market square. Just as they passed this place of safety, Gord spun left and made his dash. He ran squarely into the arms of a large, mail-clad officer of the watch. Break. All right. So, we're actually given quite a bit. Now, this is the foreign quarter, the Petit Bazaar. And here we're given quite a few mentions of different races of people. Also, you know, various things as far as farmers and serfs. And even the comment that there are serfs outside the city, that speaks either to, you know, Gygax using it casually, or really something more profound about the kind of society that exists right outside the city of Greyhawk if we're going to have serfdom. All right. We're given a little thing, dark and swarthy Rene Bargefolk. A little description. And then half-orcs, unemployed mercenaries from Hardby and the Wild Coast. So we have half-orcs accepted within the city. We have that they're mercenaries from both Hardby and the Wild Coast. I mean, that, you know, right there, that's a little interesting bit of information. And then we're introduced to the tall fellow halflings. Not really much information about them, but interesting. It's interesting that they're traveling in a fairly good-sized group of 10. And then, Petit Bazaar is generally so safe that you have someone, and the economy has jumped up so much from the slum quarter, that there you have a table selling silver jewelry. Now, when the headsman, Snaggle, is joking about Gord getting a couple of coppers, and then you have an area where there is silver jewelry on display being offered for sale, you have a vast difference between the type of social levels and the type of worlds that those that exist right there between the slum quarter and the foreign quarter. Now, Gord's ability to steal that, and not obviously from what he says, not being noticed immediately, he's able to steal. He's doing an act of thievery that should even earn him in a campaign experience points. So here Gord is able to steal something that has, you know, silver piece value, if not gold piece value. And at the very end, we have the mention of a mail-clad officer of the watch, which talks, you know, I mean, there we have in the foreign quarter, we have the watch as appearing. We don't have, it does not seem like the watch takes any interest of the worst part of the slum quarter, and perhaps not even the outer edge there where the menial laborers live. All right, that is the end of chapter one. I am going to start on, I think at 6:54, I am going to end the reading for tonight and pick up tomorrow at the beginning of chapter two.